Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, February 18th, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA.
To tape.
I was going to say, you know why I sort of stumbled on some of that was because I forgot we're live to tape. I can't tell a lie. I can't even tell a lie by omission. We are live to tape, folks. But does that mean like you're going to get some old stuff? Well, actually, some of it is going to be old stuff. But Matt will tell you more about that. But you're going to get some new stuff, too. Adam Green from the PCCC, ladies and gentlemen. Bold progressives. The Progressive Change Campaign Committee. He's going to be talking to us about theory of change and how we're seeing it operate in the context of this election. It's fascinating. It is fascinating. There was a big thing. I know I had briefly mentioned it, I think, at one point over the past week or two. Movement on Social Security. We only have two candidates in there. So when they take a pledge or when they say something, it means something. Doesn't mean that it's etched in stone, but it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder for these people as presidents to go back on their word when you've got it literally written out in a pledge of sorts. And it's a fascinating story that Adam's going to tell us about. And their new project, they're going to try and do it again. And now is the time, folks. Now is the time to get this out there. Because we are now just, I guess, a couple of days away. I'm speaking about where we are in the future. It's the 18th. The caucuses are this weekend in Nevada. But Adam Green will be here with us. And then, after Adam Green, ladies and gentlemen, buckle your seatbelts. Sit down. Set the table. Do the dishes. Whatever it is. Whatever the... Hold on to your hats. Buy yourself a puppy. Whatever. I don't know what the saying should be. But are you ready for this? When new Matt came and applied for a job here. I don't know if you did this in writing or you told me this. But he said, I've got a podcast. And what I do is I take Nixon, LBJ tapes, Kissinger tapes, JFK tapes, and I put them to music as a way of getting my friends to listen to them. And I think it was a combination of that and the fact that he came in wearing a sweater vest, I believe, and a tie that basically sealed the deal. So that's also, there's a little tip too. Every day we give you like a little work tip.
Yeah, and I haven't had to dress up since, which is also nice.
That's right. I mean, you came in, you were like immediately significantly better dressed than anybody who had been in the office before. And I was like, I love the attitude. Just, it's important to know that we can go there if we need to. So Matt, and he'll introduce it. Matt is going to, we're going to take one of those podcasts and put it on there, and it's going to be awesome. It's, I'm very excited to hear it. I don't even know which one it is. So stick around for that, and then we will have, for members, something from the Deep Archive. Do we may not, we'll have something from the members' Deep Archive. And then tomorrow, we've got another great show for you, Lily Geismer and Robert Smigel. Just keep giving and giving, folks. Giving and giving. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, I should also tell you, right now I'm on vacation. And the thing about me being on vacation is I don't shave. That's what I do for myself. I don't go to a spa. I'm just sitting around basically playing with the kids, trying to nap, maybe doing like the books or trying to respond to emails or something like that. But I let my hair down, specifically on my face. This was always a problem for me at the end of the week. Because at the end of the week, I got a shave and I got a half a beard and it's painful. It's not good. And shaving in that circumstance was always miserable until I found Harrys.com. Because I don't know if it's their blades are sharper or I don't know what it is. I don't know enough about shaving technology, to be honest with you.
I previously used a competitor, and the blades are sharper with Harry's.
Okay, so that's what, I presume that's what it was. Maybe it was the shaving cream that I got from Harry's as part of the deal. But it makes more sense that it would be the blades are sharper, because when they're sharp, they just cut the hair. They don't tug on it. And that was the problem. My hair was too long. I don't want to get into the details. It's sort of gross. I don't know why it would be gross, but it sort of is. But Harry's is the only shaving company that has both amazing quality and low prices, because I know what Matt's former razors that he used were also delivered to his house. They were cheap, I guess, right? Or cheaper than you'd buy in a store, but they sucked. They sucked. And with Harry's, factory direct prices, they've cut out the middleman, they ship it right to your door. Their blades are at half the price of the leading brand, but they are also great. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades? We can get them for half the price at Harrys.com. The Harry's starter set is an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor, and it's a beautiful razor. It's a nice chrome-style handle, moisturizing shave cream, 3 razor blades. Harry's don't generally like to discount their prices because they're obviously extremely low. But they have worked out a special offer for listeners of the Majority Report. Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with promo code Majority Report. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to Harrys.com right now. That's Harry's, Harrys.com. Enter code Majority Report at checkout. Do it now. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Adam Green. And then a selection from Matt's podcast. What's your podcast title?
Informationer.
Informationer. You can find that on iTunes. So sample it. Check it out. All right. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome to the program Adam Green, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which you can find at boldprogressives.org. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Sam Seder. How are you?
I'm well, Adam. I have to say, this has been a very good couple of weeks for... Well, not just you, but for progressives in the context of this Democratic race, and largely, not totally, but largely, a function of the work that you have been doing for years on forcing candidates, sometimes forcing, sometimes working with candidates to adopt progressive positions. Let's start with the first thing being Social Security.
Social Security, as you know, just a couple years ago, the entire spectrum of political debate in this country was whether we do nothing or whether we make cuts. And there was an intentional progressive movement attempt to shift that dialogue from that place to expanding and how far we can expand. And it is it's been quite gratifying this past week to achieve Democratic unity in the presidential race, with both candidates finally saying that they both support not cutting benefits. Sanders was there. Progressive activism got Clinton to make that clear. And now the spectrum of debate is between do we expand benefits for everybody or do we expand for some people? And boy, what a sea change that is. Quite gratifying.
It's a huge sea change. And so it's basically Bernie Sanders almost like challenged Hillary Clinton to take a pledge.
There were a couple steps before that. So actually, I don't know if you know this, the day after the Iowa caucuses, I went on Fox and Friends for the very first time, and on that show challenged Hillary Clinton to say for the first time that she would not cut Social Security benefits. And we partnered with Social Security Works. There was some media generated around that. The Huffington Post actually got a quote from the Clinton campaign.
Now, wait a second. Let me before we go forward with this. Okay, then this is now coming back to me with the Huffington Post piece. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What, strategically speaking, why Fox and Friends? Why do you go? This is the first time you've been on Fox and Friends. Why there? Why is that effective? Or is that, am I making? Is there no strategy behind that?
It was a little coincidental. Basically, it was a last minute booking, and look, we were already there was already a pending question of when do we make this public ask, right? There's been this momentum building for years due to a lot of work in many quarters of the progressive movement. There's been kind of a set of public carrots out there for this past year for Hillary Clinton, and she hadn't quite made this commitment yet. And it, I think the better question is actually why the timing now? And the timing now was that, you know, going into New Hampshire, where Clinton could not afford to have any more kind of air out of her balloon, I guess. You know, she needed to close a gap with Sanders, not have that gap increase. Given that New Hampshire had an older electorate than others, it seemed like the perfect moment to make this ask. So that's the timing why, and it was more of a coincidence that we happened to be on Fox.
That was just the opportunity. You seized it, and it was a function of this is the time to do it. I mean, this stuff I find really fascinating because this is really when, you know, there's a big debate. You know, obviously the debate between Clinton and Sanders on some level is basically, you know, it's all about really about a theory of change, right? I mean, that's sort of what it is, their debate. I mean, they have different sort of policy proposals, but I think that's underneath that. But Clinton wants to make that argument about a theory of change. You're asking for stuff that's impossible to get. I'm actually saying we can do things incrementally. And what you're talking about, what your strategy is as an outside group, is about your theory of change, right? And so this is why, I mean, I'm just explaining to the audience right here, like what I find genuinely fascinating about this. And what I think is fascinating about this is the way that the way that you impact where politicians are.
Yeah, I mean, theory of change is really key. Basically, theory of change being how can people taking action actually move the ball forward to our joint goal, right? So, you know, not all petitions are created equal, not all activism streaks are created equal. And it's really, you know, we hope to be as strategic as possible. So again, the timing here was key. Right after a very, very razor-thin race in Iowa, going into New Hampshire where progressives have leverage, going into New Hampshire where seniors were even a bigger part of the electorate than in many states, that was a moment to finally make this ask. And our challenge was to make this declaration before New Hampshire. So, you know, the Huffington Post got one of the Clinton campaign staffers to originally say, you know, she has, quote, no plans to cut Social Security. And, you know, our response to that, my co-founder, Stephanie Taylor, said, You know, George W. Bush had no plans to invade Iraq when he got elected. That's right. Not a promise, right? And so we kept kind of pushing forward. And a few days in, Bernie Sanders integrated into his stump speech and his Twitter feed for the first time, an active call on her to say whether she would cut benefits or not. And, you know, within a day of that, Hillary Clinton responded to Bernie Sanders on Twitter saying for the first time ever, I won't cut Social Security. I'll defend it and expand it. That's just huge. So it really was a great example of many movement actors pushing forward in a joint direction together. And the net effect is that the third ways of the world are now sidelined when it comes to this debate. The entire spectrum of debate right now is how far do we expand? Cuts are off the table, at least in the presidential context. And that's fantastic news for progressives.
Yeah, that is amazing. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's just sort of barely, I think, sort of registered in the media in any fashion. And it really is huge. You're just pushing up the baseline. It's a much harder thing once you've made that pledge to go back on. It's much more politically costly. And then I noticed last night in the debate, and I should say we're recording this on Friday. Last night in the Democratic debate that took place in Milwaukee, Bernie Sanders pushed even further. He was basically saying, will you join me in getting rid of the cap? And she wouldn't go there quite yet. She was saying, I think we both agree that we want to get more revenue in, right? And he's pursuing it that way. It's interesting. You know, I don't know why we don't see more of that actually, frankly, coming from the Sanders campaign of setting down some markers. Like, you know, it's one thing to say, like, okay, you're not in favor of the TPP. Will you commit to not signing the TPP as president if you become president? That I would love to see something like that, but I don't know that we're gonna.
Yeah, no, I think Bernie Sanders could be a little bit more direct and kind of set up binary choices for Clinton more often. But, you know, last night was really interesting in the sense that on the one hand, you know, we're very much in kind of celebration mode that the entire spectrum of debate is between Hillary Clinton's, you know, relatively smaller expansion and Bernie Sanders expanding for everybody. And, you know, if she were to really kind of make the case for her version and he was to make the case for his, and they agreed that there was a big difference and, you know, punted the question to voters, that would be one thing. What was a little troubling last night was that she kept saying, we agree.
Right.
And kind of muddying the waters around this question. And while, you know, I'm sympathetic to her saying that she wants to start with lower income people, particularly lower income women in terms of who gets benefit expansions, you know, the simple fact is that millions and millions of our grandparents, our veterans, disabled people, middle-class working families will get left behind under her plan who wouldn't get left behind under Sanders, and voters deserve to know that. So again, happy that we're having the debate, but I was a little troubled that the waters are getting muddied.
Yeah.
And the same with scrapping the cap. I'm not sure it was fully explained that scrapping the cap would bring in literally trillions of dollars, meaning asking the rich to pay the same rate into Social Security as the rest of us would bring in trillions of dollars, enough to both increase the solvency of Social Security and expand benefits for everybody. And I'm not sure voters fully got that last night.
Right. And I don't think they understand, too. I mean, even if, you know, just to get to the other way of also saying that is in terms of capturing as much of the nation's income in the Social Security system as we traditionally did, right? I mean, so it used to be 90%, now it's about 81%. I mean, maybe it used to be 92 and now it's 84 or something like that. But we're about 9 percentage points off in terms of the amount of the country's income that is being captured within the payroll system. And so, yeah, I agree with you. And it's, I think it's going to be up to, you know, Bernie Sanders to carry this ball. All right. So let's talk about the new thing, because, I would love to see a pledge on TPP. I don't know if that's going to happen, but the other thing that I think, what I love about what you're doing here, and it's with a couple other groups, you can tell us which ones, but I've said time and time again, this argument that Hillary Clinton's proposals are more likely to be accepted by a Republican Congress than Bernie Sanders is sort of irrelevant. The main thing that a president's going to do, at least in the first term, if they're a Democrat, that's going to have real implications is going to be appointing people to the Supreme Court and then pointing people to regulatory agencies, appointing the Treasury Secretary, and that's where your new push comes in.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to for everybody to understand that, you know, while President Obama has done some admirable stuff on executive actions in his second term, it is not as if he has maxed out and gone to the limit. There is so much power left on the table. You know, powers that were given by Congress decades ago when it comes to, you know, trust busting, breaking up big monopolies, breaking up big corporations that are essentially too big to fail. You know, those go underutilized right now. You know, the ability to prosecute Wall Street bankers and other corporate executives who break the law is really going underutilized right now when it comes to the Attorney General. The SEC's power of enforcement against big corporations, particularly Wall Street firms, goes underutilized, often cutting little deals out of court as opposed to getting the maximal version for taxpayers. So basically what we are announcing in earnest today and kind of soft launched yesterday is something that we call Presidential Appointments Matter. There's a joint petition from about five groups at presidentialappointmentsmatter.com where we're basically calling on Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders to name names when it comes to the types of people that they will consider for super important positions that relate to Wall Street and challenging Wall Street power, in particular, Treasury Secretary, Attorney General, and the SEC Chair. We're asking them to, you know, not name the one person that they absolutely will submit, but to give to voters, to make transparent for voters, a set of names that represent the type of people that they will consider for these positions, and to lay out a list of factors or criteria that they will use when making judgments for these and other senior positions. And our hope is that, you know, in the words of Elizabeth Warren, the idea that personnel is policy
right.
just becomes enshrined in this election. And it's not seen as something that you kind of keep secret until after the election, but that people pretty much acknowledge that executive power is key. Here are the type of people I will appoint, and that voters are able to judge this just as they would any other policy. And I should say that the other groups involved include the Revolving Door Project, Jeff Hauser, Public Citizens Congress Watch, led by Lisa Gilbert, Root Strikers and their campaign manager, Kurt Walters, as well as with support from Americans for Financial Reform and a group called Better Markets. So it's a really great push at presidentialappointmentsmatter.com.
That's Dennis Kelleher, right, at Better Markets?
Correct. Yep.
Another Worcester, Mass. Guy, I think, or from that area.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is now, just to be clear, this isn't unprecedented, right? I mean, we have seen candidates mention the type of people that they would, you know, like I could appoint a Bill Black type of person, right, in some position, or we've seen this before. So what you're asking, I should say, is just not unprecedented. It's a level of specificity, though, so that you can't speak generally saying I'm going to hold Wall Street to account. You're going to say, you know, because the president's not the one who actually would hold account. It's the people they appoint who would execute and would be the sort of the, not just the tip of the spear, but a big part of the spear on these things, right? I mean, and so this is just a way of sort of fleshing out policy.
Fleshing out policy, getting the presidential candidates to make these kind of identify the prism for their decision-making, not after the election in a zero accountability environment, but right during the heart of the Democratic primary in a maximum accountability environment, right? And, you know, it's, you know, to your point, candidates in many elections have been asked, you know, what are the types of people you would appoint to Supreme Court? Generally, you know, naming past justices as proxies, but that's one genre of this question. In last night's debate, there was a question about, you know, name one domestic leader and one foreign leader that you admire. And, you know, just this past week on Meet the Press, Chuck Todd actually asked Hillary Clinton directly. He said, six of the last Treasury secretaries either came from Wall Street or went to Wall Street after. He said, I think there certainly right now isn't an appetite for somebody from Wall Street to be the next Treasury secretary. Do you think you can pick one without having them have a Wall Street background? And she kind of, hedged on that question. And, you know, it was kind of a surprise. We don't need this to be a gotcha question. We want them to think about it and offer a thoughtful set of people and criteria, just as they would offer a thoughtful policy on debt-free college or expanding Social Security, any other issue.
Let me add one more precedent, too. When Hillary Clinton says, I don't know who any of your foreign policy advisors are. Mm-hmm. When that becomes a legitimate question, and it is a legitimate question, you get a sense mm-hmm. of what his foreign policy would be based upon who the advisors are, you know, and from my perspective, not necessarily to her credit, you know, she's talking about her foreign policy chops are admired by Henry Kissinger. It's the same sort of thing there, right? I mean, if it works in foreign policy, if your advisors can be indicative of what your policies would be, and certainly your future advisors would be as well.
Absolutely. Now, this is key. And I do want to just emphasize for your listeners, again, why the logic of this moment? So, you know, Hillary Clinton just lost New Hampshire by a sizable margin, 22 points. She needs progressive voters right now. Bernie Sanders, going into new territory, also wants to have as much progressive support in Nevada, South Carolina, other states as possible. Nevada is the next contest, and there were disproportionate foreclosures during the Great Recession in that state. And of course, Clinton has been pressured recently on Wall Street issues, especially on her Goldman Sachs speeches. And, you know, while the transcripts are all well and good, all of that is a proxy for the real question on voters' minds, which right. is, will you hold power accountable? Will you challenge Wall Street power? And if she were, say, to talk about names like Joseph Stiglitz or Paul Krugman and Christina Romer, even Republican Sheila Bair, who was listed in a famous Time magazine article with Elizabeth Warren as being one of the sheriffs of Wall Street, that would be send a really important signal. So again, I would just invite your listeners to join us at presidentialappointmentsmatter.com. Share it on Twitter. Feel free to CC me at Adam Green, and I'll retweet you. And again, this is our moment of leverage. And the media are already paying attention to this push. And the more grassroots energy we can put into it, the more incentive there is for Clinton, Sanders, and others to really take this seriously.
Presidential Appointments Matters. Give us one more time. Presidentialappointmentsmatter.com. Presidentialappointmentsmatter.com. Adam Green. Yep. Always a pleasure. Fascinating stuff, and appreciate, you know, that you're giving people an opportunity to not just watch passively what's happening with this election, to actually influence it and influence the positions that the candidates are taking. You guys do great work. You know, I love you. I love the PCCC. I love it.
Great. Thanks, Sam, buddy. And thanks for your attention over the years to the Social Security issue, to debt-free college, and other kind of cutting-edge progressive priorities. You know, having a life in progressive media really kind of fuels our work and this overall line of thinking. So,
all right. We'll have a link to presidentialappointmentsmatter.com at majority.fm.
Hello, Majority Report listeners. Producer Matt here to introduce some Nixon tapes set to the song Holes by band Mercury Rev. On Saturday, June 12, 1971, President Nixon enjoyed one of his happiest days in the White House, celebrating the wedding of his daughter Trisha in the Rose Garden. A little after noon the following day, he received a call from his Deputy National Security Advisor Al Haig, informing him of the Pentagon Papers leak, a major blow to the already unpopular Vietnam War. You'll hear three calls here. The first is with Deputy National Security Advisor Al Haig, who would go on to serve as Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. The second call is with Nixon's domestic advisor, John Ehrlichman. And the third is with Nixon's Attorney General, John Mitchell, and his National Security Advisor, Henry Kissinger.
Hello.
General Haig, sir. Ready.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Al. What about the casualties, Leslie? You got the figure yet?
No, sir, but I think it's going to be quite low.
Mm-hmm.
It should be as last week or better.
Yeah, it should be less than 20, I would think, yeah.
This will be very...
When do you get that? Do you know?
We don't get it officially till Monday afternoon, but we can get a reading on it.
Right, well, Monday afternoon, officially, well, let's wait till then. Fine. Okay. Nothing else of interest in the world?
Yes, sir. Very significant. This goddamn New York Times expose of the most highly classified documents of the war.
Oh,
that. I see. I didn't read the story, but you mean that was leaked out of the Pentagon?
Sir, the whole study that was done for McNamara and then carried on after McNamara left by Clifford and the Peaceniks over there. This is a devastating security breach of the greatest magnitude of anything I've
ever
seen.
Well, what's being done about it then? I mean, I didn't... did we know this was coming out?
No, we did not, sir.
Yeah?
There are just a few copies of this.
Well, what about the...
volume report.
Well, what about the... let me ask you this, though. What about the Laird? What's he going to do about it? I just start right at the top and fire some people. I mean, whatever department it came out of, I'd fire the top guy.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm sure it came from defense, and I'm sure it was stolen at the time of the turnover of the administration.
Oh, it's 2 years old, then.
I'm sure it is, and they've been holding it for a juicy time, and I think they've thrown it out to affect Hatfield McGovern. That's my own estimate.
Hello.
It's Mr. Ehrlichman calling you, sir.
Yeah.
Where?
Hello. Mr. President, the Attorney General's called a couple times about these New York Times stories, and he's advised by his people that unless he puts the Times on notice, he's probably going to waive any right of prosecution against the newspaper. And he is calling now to see if you would approve his putting them on notice before their first edition for tomorrow comes out. Apparently so.
Wait a minute. They, on the other hand, they're going to run another story tomorrow.
Right.
Why don't you just wait till after that one?
Well, his point is that he feels he has to give them some sort of advance notice, and then if they go ahead in disregard, why then there's no danger of waiver. But if he doesn't give them notice, then it's almost like entrapment. We sit here and let them go ahead on a course of conduct and don't raise any objection.
Well, could he wait one more day? They have one more day after that. I don't know.
He apparently feels under some pressure to either decide to do it or not do it.
Does he have a judgment himself as to whether he wants to or not?
Yeah, I think he wants to. You might want to give him a call and talk with him about it directly. As I'm not very well posted on this whole thing.
How do you feel about it?
Well, I'd kind of like to have a cause of action against them in the SOC in case we needed it. I'd hate to waive something as good as that. But I don't know what the ramifications would be in terms of the Hill.
Oh, Hill. It isn't going to affect the vote, in my opinion. Just...
Would you want to take a call from him?
Oh, yeah, I'll call him.
All right.
I'll call him.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Angry, jealous spies. Got telephones for eyes. Come to you as friends. We'll be right back.
Johnson's strong view that this is an attack on the whole integrity of government, that if whole whole file cabinets can be stolen and then made available to the press, you can't have orderly government anymore.
Well,
and he said if the president defends the integrity, any action we take, he will back publicly.
Well, I think that we should take this, do some undercover investigation and then open it up after your McGovern-Hatfield.
No.
We've got some information we've developed as to where these copies are and who they're likely to have leaked them, and the prime suspect, according to your friend Rostow, you're quoting, is a gentleman by the name of Ellsberg, who is a left-winger that's now at the RAND Corporation, who also have a set of these documents.
Yeah.
So,
subpoena them. Christ, get them.
So I would think that we should advise the Times. We will start our covert check, and after McGovern-Hatfield, just open it up.
Right. Go ahead.
Does that agree with you?
Yep.
All right, sir. Will do.
Yeah.